Hey, everybody. How's everybody doing this morning? Feel free to stand up. I know I was sitting there. I've moved to a standing desk because of some of my PA section colleagues, and now I find it really hard to sit all day long. So feel free to stand. I won't be offended. I actually saw the Twitter pictures from the PA section business meeting yesterday, and it seemed like they were practicing what they preached in the leadership, so that's good. Well, it's a real pleasure to be here today to talk a little about something slightly different than Sandy. I too am with Bridging the Gap Research at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and I'll be speaking about some new research that we've been doing, looking at the relationship between active living-oriented zoning codes, the built environment, and adolescent obesity and weight outcomes. And I'd like to acknowledge my co-author, Sandy, of course, our dear colleague at the University of Michigan, Yvonne Terry McElroth, without whom this presentation probably could not have occurred because she figured out the most complex mediation models I've ever seen. And then our colleagues at the University of Michigan, Patrick O'Malley and Lloyd Johnston, and Frank Chalupka at University of Illinois in Chicago. And we, too, have no relationships to financial relationships to disclose here. We also would like to acknowledge Chris Quinn, who was instrumental in helping to prepare the zoning and street segment data for this, and Deb Klosk at the University of Michigan. So just to give you a little bit of background, for those of you who are less familiar with the PA literature in this area, a number of years ago, the Task Force on Community Preventative Services issued a number of recommendations of ways to increase physical activity behaviors. And among the most prominent strategies that they recommended were factors influencing policy and environmental change. So things that would change urban scale design, street scale design, land use type of strategies. Sandy last year actually published a paper in AJPM where we looked at the relationship between the walkability of a community and adolescent obesity, again using our data from Bridging the Gap and Monitoring the Future study, and what she found there was that the odds of students being overweight or obese did decline if they were in more walkable-oriented communities. So nothing different than what logic would tell you, but unbelievably nobody really had studied this before, so we were pleased to see that. Zoning is a new area that I started delving into back in 2007, I guess, when I came to UIC. And we spent a lot of time working with urban planners. We have a large school of urban planning at UIC, and we've had the luxury of having a number of urban planning students work with us over the past 7 years. But for those of you who are less familiar, zoning and land use laws are exercises of the police powers that states grant to local governments under the 10th Amendment. It's very much a county and municipal-oriented thing. States really are not involved with zoning, and in most jurisdictions across the country, it's very much a local, municipal-level authority that exists. Some jurisdictions across the country, things are done at the county level, but for the most part, it's a local, municipal-level strategy for policymaking. It can include zoning laws. Typically, if you've never spent hours weeding through zoning codes like myself and my staff, zoning codes are usually thousands of pages long, and they include everything under the sun about what's permitted uses, so like what types of outlets are allowed to be in a community, where you have requirements for sidewalks, where you have requirements for traffic calming, where you have requirements for bike lanes, requirements for mixed use and open space and parks and all sorts of things. Anything under the sun in the environment usually is there because the zoning code allows it, and if it's not there, it's usually because the zoning code doesn't allow it. And then you add in the economic and contextual factors as well. But zoning codes are really a key clue to why our environments are designed the way they are. So if you've never taken the time to read through your community zoning code, take a look. It's actually kind of interesting. And I am a wonk, I admit it, but it's still kind of interesting to look at. So for this study, we actually wanted to look at the relationship between the active living orientation of zoning codes, and I'll explain what I mean by that in a minute, along with the active living orientation of the broader built environment, and then ultimately with student adolescent obesity and BMI outcomes. Our zoning data were compiled from 468 secondary school enrollment zones or catchments. So they were the same enrollment zones that Sandy looked at, but we had another year of data included, I believe. And they were from 2010 to 12 in the University of Michigan's Monitoring the Future study. We looked specifically at these zoning codes. So in the 468 catchments, figure we had about 1,000 to 1,200 municipal and county level jurisdictions that we looked at. And we actually obtained hard copies of all their zoning codes, and we had a very detailed audit tool that I'll show you in a minute, but we evaluated the active living orientation of their zoning codes in terms of the requirements for walking and biking, crosswalks, bike lanes, bike parking, trails, paths, complete streets, context-sensitive design. We have a whole other series of measures that look at open space and parks and things like that, but for this analysis, I didn't include those. I have a whole wonderful group of trained master's urban planner and students and graduates who work with me on this project, and they are yeomen in this effort. We've done reliability testing on our pilot work. We've had over 90% agreement each time we bring in a new coder. These are two pages from our zoning audit tool, and the zoning audit tool, I think, is about 4 pages for the built environment, and we have another one for food policy environment as well. I don't think I have a pointer. I forgot to bring my pointer. Basically, we look to see within every single district or zone within a zoning code. So the way zoning codes are set up, they're set up so that you have different sections of a community divided in a zoning code. So you'll have residential areas, commercial areas, mixed-use areas, you'll have school areas, you'll have open space and parks, you'll have pedestrian-oriented development, transit-oriented development, new urbanist-type zoning, you name it. So zoning codes are situated such that you have different descriptions of what's required in different areas of the community. So that's why if you go to the downtown part of your community, it may be designed very differently than other areas of the community, and that's because the zoning code is written differently to require different things in that part of the community. So we actually evaluate those markers that I told you about on the prior page, traffic calming, bike lanes, street segment, sidewalks, all that, for every single different type of zone and districting, every single jurisdiction we looked at, so all 1,400 jurisdictions across the 468 catchments. And then we used the street segment data that Sandy led the collection of, it was basically a random sample of street segments for all the catchments, all 468 catchments in our analysis. And Sandy already described for you our street segment methodology, but for this purpose, we're doing observations of street segments on two facing sides of a street block. Sandy designed this audit tool for observing the street segments and auditing sidewalks, bike lanes, all the same things that I looked at with my zoning code. We tried to design this to actually be apples to apples, so we have policy and environmental measures that are comparable to one another. From there, we developed two sets of indices. We developed an active living zoning index, and I call this the required active living index because we also have a separate set of measures that whether or not the zoning code encourages things to. For this analysis today, I'm just looking at the required measures, things that are definitively required by the zoning code. So we created a scale from 0 to 6 of the different measures we looked at. We weighted the zoning index for the proportion of youth living in the catchment that were exposed to the zoning. And then we also had a modified built environment active living oriented index. It's modified because it built off of Sandy's paper from 2013 at AJPM by adding in bike lanes and other bike-related measures and trails and things like that. And then our student data, as we mentioned, came from the Monitor in the Future at the University of Michigan. Bridging the Gap is a collaborative between University of Illinois Chicago and University of Michigan. That's why our data are all linked with the Monitor in the Future data. And we ended up having 33,636 students across the 3 years in our sample who are located in 468 secondary school catchments or enrollment zones. The catchment areas were defined by those school enrollment zones that surrounded the Monitor in the Future schools. And for this analysis, we looked at three specific outcomes. BMI percentile that were calculated using the CDC growth charts, age and gender adjusted. Obesity, a dichotomous measure that was gender and age adjusted for BMI greater than or equal to the 95th percentile. And then we also had one that measured at or above median BMI percentile and below median percentile. We used very sophisticated multi-level mediation modeling techniques with zoning policy in the built environment at level 2 and student outcomes at level 1. Yvonne Terry McElrath has created these incredible methodology for doing multi-level mediation with survey-weighted data, complex survey-weighted data. She contacted Robin Bush and everybody under the sun. Nobody had figured out how to do this before, but Yvonne really figured it out. And we have a paper coming out in AJPM that uses this methodology, and Yvonne Terry McElrath will be the lead author. It's looking at SOGA policy, state laws governing SOGA and school availability and student consumption. So look for that paper if you're interested in these methods. We used STATA GLAM models for conducting the analyses, and then we control for a variety of Kashmir site-level measures as well as individual-level data. This is just sort of conceptually what the mediation model looked at, and so as I described, we're interested in looking at the relationship between zoning, the environment, and obesity-related outcomes, both as zoning working through the environment to influence obesity, as well as the direct effect of zoning and student obesity outcomes. The one thing I should note is that we were looking at latent community-level student obesity-related outcomes, so the proportion of students in school queue that have obesity, and we brought those up to the catchment level. As I mentioned, I forgot to put my big N on this, but we had 33,636 students in our analysis out of 468 catchments. And this is just some descriptive data and shows you that about 12% were obese with a BMI percentile, about mean BMI percentile of 60.9, which was pretty high. We had a zoning index that ranged from 0 to 6. Our mean was 1.95, and our active living index was pretty small. So it means that not a lot of communities had a lot of the markers we were looking for in the environment. We control for student safety and disorder and sprawl, household income, and then we also control for gender, parental education. All the individual student-level measures, I should note, are self-reported data. Monitoring the Future is a self-reported survey. So this is sort of my punchline. I'm a policy researcher, so I like to jump to the punch and sort of present things as easily and graphically as possible to communicate with policymakers. No offense to any policymakers in the room, but they always get upset with me when I just present data to them. They just want to see it in one easy picture, and what did they say? One picture's worth 1,000 words. So this is my one picture. And so what you can see here is that zoning, active living-oriented zoning is associated with more active living-oriented environments. And I'm going from left to right. More active living-oriented environments are associated with lower student obesity. And then through more active living environments, active living zoning is associated with lower student obesity. So now for all of us in the room that are data-oriented, here we go. So this is the full model. It shows you the mediation model. And you can see we have both a fully mediated model and a partially mediated model, and I'll describe that now. So what we're interested in looking at was, does zoning associate with lower student obesity on its own and through changes to the environment? We hypothesized that zoning would associate with changes to the environment, which ultimately would associate with lower student obesity. And we were sort of surprised to find this direct relationship as well between zoning and student obesity without the environmental influence. So we wanted to know why that was happening. Was it just that healthy people are living in healthy communities and therefore they zone for healthy active living, or was something else going on? So what we did was we divided the students into two groups, at or above versus below median BMI percentile, and then for each group we ran separate mediation models. So the first one was for the below median BMI group, the healthier group, and we did find here, consistent with what we found in the full model, that more active living-oriented zoning is associated with more active living, something's wrong with my red tape type, sorry about that. It should be say that more active living-oriented zoning I'm confused. I was at the ER to 1 o'clock this morning, so I'm really tired. More active living-oriented zoning is associated with more active living-oriented environments, but it's not associated with increased student BMI percentile or lower student BMI percentile. We also still saw a direct association between zoning and BMI percentile, but we didn't see the mediation. However, with the at or above median group, so this is the more high-risk group, these are the less healthy kids, we saw a fully mediated model. So what we're seeing here with the less healthy kids is that zoning is working through changes in the environment to improve the environment to reduce obesity. And that's really what you would want to see. So what do we make of all this? My mantra, zoning can make a difference. You know, people in public health, we've been talking increasingly in the physical activity area to work with our partners, and zoning and land use partners are really important partners, and this data begins to start to show us why it's important to work with zoning and planning officials. What's particularly noteworthy about our study is that among students with higher BMI percentiles, zoning was working through changes in the environment. So zoning is doing what it intended. Zoning laws are in place. It's being implemented through changes to the environment, and for more at-risk kids, it's helping to reduce their obesity because they're living in communities that are healthier communities. And as I said, public health people should be working with zoning and planning people. Provide them data on the active living orientation of your community, on the active living orientation of the zoning codes, where changes can be made. Planning and zoning meetings are open to the public, so any one of us could go in there and share data and submit testimony and help to shape the future of our communities. But because we saw that that direct association between zoning and student obesity as well, it's still important to look at these other factors that may be going on. Zoning may be a proxy for other things that are going on in the environment as well, and so that's something that we need to be exploring a little bit further, and we plan to do so as well. The findings from our study were consistent with two of Sandy's prior studies that indicate that changes to the environment can have the greatest effect on those youth who are most at risk for obesity. And our study can really help to shape the future development patterns and active living policies in our communities. There are some recent data out that's showing in the next couple of decades, over two-thirds of our built environment will either be replaced or built again, replaced or built over. So this is an opportune time. Places like New Orleans after Katrina, it was an opportune time for them to re-examine their zoning code, and they actually completely revamped it, and it's led to a lot of the changes that you've seen down here since Katrina. So with that, I will leave you with a different version of our webpage. Same message, though. Sign up for our email list. We don't email a lot. We only email when we have new studies and reports coming out, and you can follow us on Twitter as well. Thank you very much.